Blog Talk Radio.
What you want to be their entertainment, their playthings, their pets, cowering beneath a whip, and then fighting amongst ourselves? Is this what you want?
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them, envied them, and for what? To be treated like an animal.
We are not animals! We do have a choice! We can choose to be more than this! We can be slaves! Or we can be!
Skills.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's, I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview. I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Assalamu alaikum. In the name of Allah came the person of Master Farad Muhammad. I bear witness there is no God but Allah. I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his last and greatest messenger. I, Minister Dawood Muhammad, can never thank Allah enough for my teacher, whom we refer to as the Honorable Minister Lodex. I greet my brothers and sisters today in the Blog Talk family at large with the green words, peace of Assalamu alaikum. It is my pleasure and my humble honor to come on 13 Revolution Radio again and have the blessing and the honor to continue to present viable alternatives to what you've been hearing, what you've been seeing for so long, and to try to bring on as many people with revolutionary views that actually would give you some practical boots on the ground knowledge, wisdom, understanding, help you to understand what we need to do to reconstruct high black society and move our people from revolution to reconstruction and from reconstruction to renaissance. And to be very honest with you, brothers and sisters, when you think about me, when it's all said and done, when you think about my show being 13 Revolution or the show Allah blessed me with, you will have to say that brother brought a lot of black women on his show, more so than the Black Women Is God brothers and sisters, more so than feminist sisters, more so than anybody, because I myself just believe in the black woman's voice. I just believe in the power of the black woman's voice. I believe that when we give sisters the floor, the chair, we allow them to come out with their true creativity and to come with the raw factual message. I mean, of course, there's going to be brothers and sisters who go on rants and talk about nothing and, you know, get emotional and stuff like that. But I know black talent when I hear it, and I know the power of God in a voice when I hear it. And so, therefore, that leads me to this particular show that we're going to do, because this is a sister that I am involved in a group with, and, you know, we are trying to do some things that we will talk about on the show, but she is like one of the vanguards of the group, and I heard her voice in the group, and I said, wow, that sister's voice is powerful. I got to find a way to feature that voice on my show. And when I say the voice is powerful, I don't mean she's just a talker, but sister is highly accomplished in her personal life as well as in her public life. And again, when you have a black woman that has a powerful voice that you know can touch the hearts of both men and women, you got to give that person the platform. This is something that's lacking in the conscious community, in the Islamic community, in the Christian community, and all in the revolutionary and the nationalist community. We know about Asada Shakur, but it's not like people are posting videos and messages of Asada on radio or on Facebook every day. We know about Nina Simone, and there's basically about three or four videos of Nina Simone that we post. And quite frankly, there's got to be more than that. You know, we know about Angela Davis. There's so many sisters that we know about, but we don't really know what they said, and we can't attribute any strong quotes to them. Oh, but we know what Martin Luther King said, didn't we? We know what Malcolm X said, and then we know what Donald Elijah Muhammad said, Noble Drew Ali said, Marcus Garvey said, but it's not many sisters that you can think of, you know, when you start talking to somebody and you want to reach into your revolutionary grab bag. Nine times out of ten, you're not reaching into your grab bag to pull out a quote from a sister is what I'm saying. I hope to have the great, beautiful Ciesia on my show. And some others, there's a lot of other sisters. I'm not even done yet. Trust me when I tell you. You know, Sunday we had Sister Angela Freeman, also known as Lady Shabazz, on the show. Man, that show was excellent. And Sister delivered. I'm about to say homegirl. Sister delivered for us. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, my dear sister, Sister Rahima Shakir Allah, she is a very powerful sister. She's a mother. She's a business owner. And anyway, you know what? I'm not even going to go no further. It is my pleasure, my humble honor, to bring forward my sister from the Allah group, Sister Rahima. Sister, are you there?
Yes, sir. Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikumsalam, sister. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine, sir.
Fantastic, fantastic. I'm doing fine as well. I'm hoping that this time they're going to hear the Sister Rahima that I know and love. The one that shakes them walls and makes brothers, you know, stand up and sisters stand up and want to do something for themselves. So anyway, let's get on into this. So I'm first, you know how I do. I try to layer things, you know what I mean? So, you know, there may be some people that heard our last show, but that was a little while ago, sis. So if you can you briefly give the people, or reacquaint the people, I should say, with your Islamic background and how you came into consciousness?
Well, I came into consciousness, I don't want to say by mistake, because it wasn't by mistake. It was a lost plan that I came.
Right.
I actually had some friends that were Muslim in the NOI, in the Nation of Islam, under
right.
the leadership of Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Right,
and
right.
They had posed the question, if you could be any religion, what would you be? And at the time, I never heard of Islam. I never even knew what a Muslim was or anything like that. So I'm like, I want to be a Muslim. Where that came from, I have no idea. And they were like, oh, yeah. Right. So they're like, in the meantime, like, oh, man, she wants to be a Muslim. See, they thought it was, you know, I just heard this and just pulled it out the sky. But, you know, it's kind of that you say something, you look like, what did I just say, you know, type of thing. So that was like age 16 that I actually went into the NOI by myself, no family, you know, no friends, nothing. I just went, you know, by myself. And then shortly after that, I basically knew some people that were in the Nation of Gods and Earth. And I started building with them. And, you know, how it was comfortable. They spoke my language.
Right.
It was comfortable. Then later on, you know, I basically started not dibbling, dabbing, but learning, like, oh, I have to learn more. So I started to get into other sciences as well. But my heart has always been the Nation of Islam.
Right, right. Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. And you know, we all know you to be a sister that's very universal. So therefore, you know, you do post stuff that has to do with the message of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But then sometimes you may post some things, a lot of comedic things. Sometimes you may post some things. It's good to be well-rounded. And that's one of the things that we both agree on, especially with science. You do a lot of this. Okay, so from what I remember before, you taught Arabic at Muhammad University, and you were a high-level official in the food service industry, and now you own land also. Can you please give our black women listeners out there a view, you know, kind of your mentality and how you let nothing stop you, you know, with your family and what you're trying to do for your family?
Well, brother, how I do that is, first of all, just meditation and studious. You know, I just get it, and, you know, you just got to get out and get it. But first of all, you have to have a love for self. That's first and foremost. You have to have a love for self. And I'm not talking about, you know, loving yourself as far as your hair, your nails, and all that. I'm talking about you got to deeply have a love for yourself. You have to be almost like on survival mode. If I'm on an island all by myself, how would I survive? And even though you're in a community with a bunch of people of different nationalities, ethnic groups, whatever it may be, you have to say, I'm still on this island by myself. And you get out and you figure out, okay, on my island, what do I need? It's like, you know how some people play these app games on their phone and you have to build these cities up. And, you know, that's kind of like the mentality that you have to have. You have to try to figure out how I'm going to build up my home or my city around me. And you start bringing things into yourself. Okay, I need a business because I need to feed my family. So what can I do? You know, what kind of creativity do I have so that I can create something for my family, or what can I do so that I can, you know, make some type of ends, you know, ends meet. Then you have to say, okay, I need some type of education. And so you go on and on from there. And you allow nothing to stop you, because if you do, it's almost like you may not survive on your island, because now you have to depend on somebody else to feed you. And they may not have the skills that you have. And somebody might come up short. So, you know, and self-preservation is the first law of nature. So, you know, if you have to depend on somebody else, they're going to preserve themselves first before they preserve you. And that's fair.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's fair, because the God put in us that self-preservation is the first law of nature. So I let nothing stop me, because, one, I have love for self, which means I have love for my family, and I know that I brought individuals into this world that depend on me, you know.
Right.
So, which will later on, their spouses will depend on them. You know, that's basically how I do it.
Right. Now, as a sidebar to that question, owning land, you own land, you own your own home, you and your husband fix up your own homes and things like that. You know, was that something that you were nervous about in the beginning? And how did you, because now you're a king at it, because I know you'd be like, oh, brothers, we got to, you know, I buy up land here in Cleveland, we're going to buy up a whole block. And I'd be sitting back like, what? So, you know, how did you get that mentality?
Well, I don't know, bro. I really can't tell you how I got that. I came to that conclusion, but, you know, it's a bad example, but it's a good example. I used to listen, you know, sit on the internet, and I see people say, okay, money is in real estate, or money's in this, and money's in that, and freedom is in having something, and really you can have, like, the nice houses, I mean, the nice cars, the nice shoes, the nice clothes, everything that's materialistic. But how Europeans measure success is by what you own. And usually that's
right.
Land, property, that kind of stuff is what they say, okay, you have money or you have resources that will help you to survive. And so everything else is non-important. So my thought was, I went to my husband, I'm like, forget it. Let's just go ahead and invest everything we have and buy a home. One, I came up with that idea because I didn't want to be homeless. That's the first thing. And because when you have your own home, you know no one's going to come and take that away from you. You know, no one can come and take what's yours. That is yours. Okay?
Right.
So that was number one. So I was like, well, if times get rough, I don't want to pay a landlord. I want to be able to have my own stuff. So it went from there. Then all of a sudden, houses on my block started opening up. And so I'm like telling my husband, I'm like, we need to get these houses. I'm like, we have 10 children. So when we die, each child can have their own. Now, whether they want to live in it or they want to sell it, at least it's there. But we teach them to try to keep it and preserve it so they can have something, you know, so that when we die, that they can have something. And that way they don't have to be forced on, you know, worrying about where they're going to live. So I started, when the houses came available on my block, I started buying them.
And
that's where it started. So my husband has a degree in electricity, but also he's a self-taught construction person, worker.
Right.
And he can basically build houses from scratch, but he just goes in and does the drywall. Anything that needs to be fixed, he can do it. So he said, I'm going to teach you how to build these houses, because if something happens to me, you need to be able to know how to do it, because if you need to hire somebody or, you know, our sons are not available, you know what they're doing. So everything that he's doing, from the furnaces, I mean, all the way up to putting in a fence, I'm right there. Myself, my daughters, my sons, we're right there. We help each other. And so basically that's how I did it. And then I got the idea, I need to teach this to other people.
Right.
So
now, what's beautiful about what
they
you're doing, though, if I may interrupt, what's beautiful about what you're doing is that a lot of children, black children, I should say, they don't get a chance to work with tools or do any kind of construction when they're younger. And if they grow up and they want to, you know, let's just say they want to get a job as a mechanic or something like that. A lot of black children are disadvantaged, like myself, because we did not grow up using tools and we had no, you know, we never had that kind of application. You are reversing that trend by involving your children in the building of these houses and things like that, because then they will be mechanically inclined. So if they go into a trade, they already have a head start on other children. I just wanted to point that out.
Right. You know, you have to teach them something that they can be self-employed. That's the number one thing. You teach your children from the birth. As soon as I birth my children out, they're at, you know, events with us. They're doing things with us. You know, it's from the womb to the grave. You have to teach them self, you know, sufficiency so that they'll be able to go out and make a living for their own. Because when they turn 16, 17, 18, and they want to work, and usually that's around the age that our children want to go out and seek jobs from, you know, Caucasians, they, instead of doing that, we're like, okay, let's think about what we could do. Okay, people's yards need to be cut. people need their house painted. There's old people on the block that may need to, you know, go here or there. You'll have your driver's license. Maybe you could be a chauffeur. So we teach them anything you do, just be self-sufficient about it.
Got you. Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, this is my dear sister, Sister Rahima, and we are getting into, we're just laying a foundation for some heavy stuff that we're going to get into. But her story is fascinating, and I think it's encouraging to a lot of other women who may have children and think that children is something that holds them back from doing what they want to do. And here, you just dropped it, because I didn't want to mention it, but you just dropped it. You have 10 children, and you're doing all of this, which makes you that much more of a role model for black women, you know, to do what they want to do. No doubt. So you are, in my judgment, well, in all of our judgments, you're like the vanguard of our group, which we call the Allah Group. And it seeks to build a community that will be controlled and developed here in America. Can you please give us a brief description of the Allah Group's goals?
Well, eventually, the Allah Group's goal is to have land and adequate housing, like a little gated community or communities for our people.
Right.
That we'll be able to live inside of these communities and have, like I said, our own houses, our own land, grow our own food, but at the same time have each individual be invested into that so that they will
right.
have their own home, you know, at the end of whatever policy without charging interest. So
right.
say, for instance, like we buy a house that's $2,000-$3,000, we're not going to charge that person $45,000 to live in a house that we paid $2,000. And what
exactly.
this person would do would basically help in getting that house up to where it needs to be, and then they start to own that house, you know,
right.
and they can purchase it from us for little or nothing, you know,
right.
you know, so that they'll have something like a, say, for instance, you got to just basically – you're, what you're going to do is purchase the house for, like, say, $10,000. But that's only
mm-hmm.
covering your what we did to make the house beautiful for you. And either
right.
you put your own money in, we helped you, we're going to help build, everybody in the community will help build that house up. So we'll do that.
Right.
Plus have land. Then we go on to the next person and to the next person and to the next person until there's a community of people.
Mm.
And then inside that little community, we'll be able to extinguish what our rules and regulations will be for our community. It's just like
right.
any other community that any other Caucasian put up. They put up gate communities, but when you live inside of that community, you have to abide by their rules. You know,
that's
whether
right.
it's
that's
all
right.
your houses have to be the same color, whether your trash cans have to be a certain color or a certain, you know, whatever it may be, but you have to, in order to live there, you have to abide by the rules. It's the same thing with us. We want a righteous community in the hills of North America that we'll be able
Thank
to
you.
Send our children to the school across the street or down the street, but they will have security walk them to and from. But first of all, they wouldn't even have to have security because anybody know that if they come into the community causing any type of mischief, then we'll have the, you know, right to do what we have to do to them. You know,
right,
but that,
right.
that builds time, that builds, you have to have the finances for that, and that takes extraordinary people who actually want to work. Because what happens is our people think that just because I donate money or just because I helped a little bit, then it should be abracadabra. Not realizing
yeah.
that takes time, that takes effort to do, and we're already fighting a system that wants us dead anyway. You know, don't even want
yeah.
us to be here altogether. Not only are we fighting those people, we're also fighting our own people. You know, those ones that say, okay, well, America's going to be destroyed in 2 years. You know, so you have those type of people as well that don't want to see us successful. So what we do, what we're thinking, and what we want to put in place is to have a community where if Allah chooses to destroy the earth 6 months from now, 2 years from now, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, we still have to survive.
Right.
But in our process of surviving, we need to be able to have good homes, you know, food, shelter, you know, all the different things that every human being is entitled to have, you know,
right,
and then
right.
also link up with other people who are doing other things, whether across seas or, you know, wherever it may be, we can link up with them so that we'll have a community here in America where we're shipping our food out or, you know, we're doing different things within our communities to them and they're shipping to us. So we're networking overseas as well. So it's not just
right.
our community that we're worried about. We're just trying to build a righteous community.
Right, right. And that's a, man, that is beautiful, sister. You laid it down, and I'm so glad you explained it that way because a lot of people are interested in this kind of thing, and they don't know that groups like this exist. And so, therefore, this is beautiful. One of the things I like the most is, A, buying a house and you don't get charged the interest, and B, when you do buy a house, everybody helps you to pick, you know, to build it up because that, I mean, that establishes love, it establishes a bond, it makes the job go faster, and it definitely establishes a community. This is what we, okay, so this bleeds into my next, because I don't want to get too excited here, but this bleeds into my next question, which is, okay, you and I both have many, many, many years being followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And, you know, at least two decades, both of us. And I arrived to this conclusion, you did also. How did you arrive to this conclusion, having been the follower of the Unobliged Mormon? Because you can bear witness, there's a lot of brothers and sisters out there still stuck in the twilight zone thinking that we in 1940, and all we have to basically do is establish a building somewhere, sell papers and fish, and attend meetings. How did you arrive to the conclusion that we need this kind of community?
Well, the math just wasn't adding up. Let's
right.
just say it like that. I just got to be blunt about it. The math just wasn't adding up. And after year after year after year, and you're telling me the same thing. But, you know, I think when people come in the nation at first, they still are a little spooky, regardless
right.
of if they followed Christianity, whatever they did. They're still a little spooky. And so they think that, like I just explained before, that it's just going to be abracadabra overnight. They don't understand
right.
that, you know, to one day could be 1,000 years for Allah, you know, whatever it may be, you know. So
we
tend to just be like, well, I'm trying to use my words carefully because I don't want to offend anyone. But you have to move down to the modern times, period, point blank.
Right.
You have to move
right.
down to the modern times, and if you don't move down to the modern times, you will die. And
right.
and I'm not meaning, like, physically just die. It will slowly eat at you because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that's to
right.
teach the blind, deaf, and dumb. You know, that
right.
means that, if, like I said before, if Allah destroyed the earth tomorrow or 1,000 years from now, we have to be able to survive on this planet. So that means that
yes.
we can't live in some outer space or in the past. We have to move forward. And in moving forward,
right.
like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, that after me, this is not going to be no more. You don't have to come to the temples anymore. This is not going to be. Anymore like this.
Right.
But what I do
right.
want you to do is to set up a council and study the white man, study how he runs the White House and Congress and the laws and different things like this, because this is the same thing that you're going to have to do in order to have a successful community or nation.
Right.
You know, you
right.
don't know what is in store for us as a people. You don't know, America
right.
owes trillions and trillions of dollars of debt, okay? So that means that somebody eventually may come and purchase this land. And
right.
you don't know the people that may purchase this land may be a friend of ours.
Right.
And they say, okay, I'm going to give you three states. Just say,
right.
I'm going to give you three
right.
states. You're going to have right. so many years to build it up, and if you will take it back and you become, basically, I'm not going to say it like this, but you become our slaves again. I mean,
right.
we have to think like this. But if they give you a chance to build it up, that means that you have to be able to have some type of skills, some type
mm-hmm.
of know-how
yes,
in
ma'am.
Order to do. How are you going to build a nation, brother, and you don't know how to build a house or you don't
right.
know how to read? Our people
right.
only speak really 400 words to syllabary well. So how you
right.
can't even read, so how are you going to understand law? How are you going to create
right.
law? How are you going to have people to abide by a law that you don't even yourself understand?
Right.
So it's the same thing, you know, with our nation. A lot of times we don't understand there's layers and layers and layers on top of this, but it's so simple a baby could understand. And the first thing is to just go for self. If you start there taxing our people, we can go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the number one thing. People say, well, I want to support black business, but y'all charge too much. Realistically, we do. But at the same time, you got to look at the flip side. We don't get the same deals as the Arabs, as the Chinese people. We don't get those same deals that the white people get.
Right.
We get them at a little higher, so we have to charge a little higher.
Right.
However, being I'm frugal, not cheap, but I'm very frugal. I look for all the best deals. It's like the government, when they want somebody to do a job, everybody has to bid for it. So I'm the bid seeker. So anything that I bring into my house, I got to find out the price, what's the cheapest one, but the best one, you know. So I have to go around looking for a different material or different things so I can build a good house or a good foundation for my home.
Right.
So it's the same thing with us. You know, we have to be able to find things in our nation that's going to help us be a strong nation with the materials that we have, if that makes sense. A lot of us, we tend to overthink our people, and we make our people feel bad because our people don't have knowledge of self.
Right.
But those same ones that have knowledge of self are the same ones that are destroying our people, almost like you're causing our people's doom instead of supporting our people to the future.
Right. That's right. That's right, sis. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I guess the last question on that particular note on the law group, but we'll come back to it because there's some stuff that I know you want to say. But, you know, I remember when we first started and I was invited by another brother to the group. And I would say it was like 30 to 40 people that was on these conference calls. And then slowly but surely it just whittled down to like the five of us. Why do you think that is? Why was it so many people that was down for it in the beginning, and then it just whittled down to us five?
Well, everybody comes for different reasons. You know, everybody comes for different reasons, and some people may have been sent there to see what's going on. Some people may wanted to, but as soon as they heard, I think it was one conference call that they had asked, well, are you down with Farrakhan? And I thought this was the Farrakhan group. And so the brothers had to tell the sister, like, no, we're not down with Farrakhan, but we're with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Click. I'm like, wow.
I remember that.
I'm like, wow, you know, if we don't have anything in common, we should have the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in common and Master Farah Muhammad in common. If we don't have anything else. Forget everything else at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, that's what's causing the confusion. But we're not even talking on the basis of religion or way of life. We're talking about let's come together as a people so that we can have something. But our people are so caught up in labels that they don't care. They will lose their own salvation.
Right.
So that because it's not going to coincide with what somebody is telling them. So. It came down to the last five. I always have this saying, only the strong will survive. And not saying that I'm one of those candidates that I'm just almighty, you know, strong or whatever. But, you know, Allah knows the heart. You know, at the end of the day, Allah knows the heart, and Allah judges us by our heart. So we know our heart and our own content. So those five that was left is because the heart was right. The heart wants what the heart wants. The heart wants to say, I want freedom, justice, and equality for my people. I want to see the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's words taken into the future. I want to see that council. I want to see my people live the new Islam that everybody keeps talking about.
I want to see this.
So those people are the ones that are left, or the ones that said, this is what I want. I want strict rule. I want the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teaching. But at the same time, they're not so far back in 1940s, 50s, or 60s. They know what time it is. They know the time is at hand. But they also know what their duty is. So
right.
being that they know what their duty is, they know what they have to, what must be done.
Right.
You know, so it's not about lip professing at the end of the day. It doesn't matter if you have a bow tie on and you crisp and sharp and can drill and or even a sister with the gun. It's not about that. It's about what have you, what lives have you saved? Lives have you saved?
Yes, ma'am.
You know, it could
yes,
be a sister that's, you know, out here on the street, but she may save
right.
your life. But
right.
you don't look past her because she don't have on a garment. You know, so, you know, the Quran said there's many messengers. Some you may
right.
know and some you may not know.
Some you may not know. That's right. That's right. All right.
So that's why we came down to the last
today.
Five, because they want it. You know, we want
right.
it.
Right. Without a doubt. Okay. So leading, and I guess before we, well, let me cap that particular segment off with this. You have older children, I have older children. You mentioned the amount of children you have, I have five. Okay. And I guess a lot of times there's a struggle keeping your older children on the path that you're on, because you
right.
raise your children inside the construct that we know as the nation or Nation of Islam. Others may raise their children inside the more science temple paradigm, whatever it may be. And, you know, you think that they're going to grow up and they're going to, take, you know, carry, pick up the flag and carry in your footsteps. But we find out that that's not necessarily the case. So could you just give us a brief description or just give us a brief thing, just a brief talk on the struggle of keeping your older children inside the paradigm or the construct of revolution and what it is, you know, how hard it is to keep them there, knowing that this world has so many things for them, and they may not want to follow in your footsteps to help black people and try to build a community for black people.
Well, see, well, I could speak on that. And I know that ever since I started having my children, this is all that
mm-hmm.
they know. They ate it, they slept it. I mean, we go riding, I'm talking about it, you know, I ask them questions. But I do have, you know, some older children. They're like, okay, we're grown now, and we want a taste of this world. And they're not so far gone that I still can't talk to them. But they're
right.
out there, you know, trying to find their way, which I already told them, if you just stop struggling, stop fighting yourself, you already have your way. You just don't
right,
want that
right.
way. And that is
right.
the righteous way, you know. So now sometimes, you know, you heard that saying, if you love something, you have to let it go. And if it returns
right.
back, it was meant to be. Well, that's the
mm-hmm.
kind of attitude that you kind of have to have, because we got to be real. And this is why it's important for us to have our own community, you know, almost like the how the Amish do it. So we're
mm-hmm.
going to be sending our children off so that they can do whatever they want to make that choice. But
right.
this is why we have to have our own community so that they will not be tempted. We have to be
right.
real. We live in a real world where when you're driving down the street, they want to know, why does that woman have those clothes on? Or why is that brother got those pants on like that? They want to
mm-hmm.
know these
yes,
questions.
Ma'am.
You know, they
That's
want to
right.
know why they can't eat certain foods, even though, now they won't, all of the Muslim children that I know, they won't mess with the pork, but then they'll mess with other things like the shellfish and, you know,
right.
different things like that. They won't mess with the pork, but they will definitely
right.
mess with the other things, because that's, they go out with their friends and their friends take them to places like that, and they want to know why I can't do this. And even
right.
when you try to tell them, they have their own mind. You know, Allah has 99 attributes. So their attribute may not be our attribute. We have to take it as though they are in our care, we're their caretakers, you know, their caregivers,
right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
And that means that we're only lent to them and they're only lent to us, because eventually
right.
they belong to Allah. So that means that we have
right.
to let them go and let them find their own way. And if it,
right.
if this is what their path is to be, then they will be back. You know, but
right.
as long as you as a parent give them the right guidance, you show them by right example, because example is everything. You could talk about your blue space. But if you led a right life, then your children will be back. And so a lot of people will be like, well, it's the parents' fault. It's the parents' fault. That's not always the case. It's not always the case.
Right.
When your children start going off to college and different schools like that, they start getting influenced by that.
Right.
So we have to understand that you cannot force what you believe on your children, because Islam, there's no compulsion in Islam. So whatever they want to do, they're free to do that.
Right.
Now it's your obligation as a parent whether you want to bring that back into your home once they go, or do you want them to just be out there on the street? Me personally, now my husband, he's a lawmaker. He puts it down, you know, he's an enforcer. Okay, let's just put it like that. He's the enforcer. we both lay the law down because there's equality in our house. So we both lay the law down, but he's the enforcer when things don't go right. But I'm the type of person, and as mothers should be, you have to understand our children. The mothers is a little bit more compassionate. And because I gave my children a lot of love, when things do happen with them, they always come back and say, Mom, you was right.
Right.
And you start to see them bear witness, and then slowly but surely they start turning.
Ooh.
Now, like I said, I have 10 children, and each children possesses a different attribute. And I have one that's so militant, you know, I'm like, that's all. Ever since she was a baby, I'm like, that's my vanguard. And she's like that to this day. So now she's in Alabama in college, and she calls me and she says, Mom, did you know such and such and such? And see, now she's getting firsthand what I've told her about the South. And so I'm like, just be careful. Just be careful. Them trees have secrets out there, so just be careful, you know. And so she's the militant one. And then I have my son and my other daughter, you know, they're the same way. They're starting to slowly turn back to what they were taught in the beginning because I didn't give up on them. A lot of times, especially us in the nation, we tend to give up on our children.
Yes.
You know, we become almost like the world parents. And we should have more compassion and more love for our children than what the world does. So when the world, when you start teaching your children or treating your children like the world, you're no better than the lost found, except for you got a bow tie on and a garment on.
Right.
So you can't do that. You know, you can't do that.
Right.
You have to show unconditional love, because you want that too, right?
Right.
You know, we as
no
parents
doubt.
Want unconditional love. There's times, you know, when you're praying, and sometimes we get a little spooky and we're like, oh, la, you know, just help me with this. And if you, you know, do this for me, I promise you I'll never do this again. How many times your children have asked you for that? Crying to you, saying the same prayer.
Right.
And you treat them unjust.
Right.
And you said, until you get
although
your life
you were
together,
forgiven, you don't forgive them.
Exactly. You were forgiven.
Right.
And you were given
right.
another chance. Now, whether you did right by the chance or not, that's between you and the God. But if he gave you a chance, or, you know, you gave yourself a chance, or you gave yourself and everything's going on, then you should do that for your children. And when you show your children the love of Islam or any righteous way, they will be back.
Right.
They will be back.
That's
how I
deal
with them. So,
I'm
everybody's
glad you said
waiting
that because
on my word.
Because
some people may not agree with me, you know, so, but that's my, what I believe, how I feel about it. And I haven't, my children, they went through stages as well. You know, both their mother and father strong in the nation. But they chose other ways. I still love them.
Right.
Still love them. And
okay,
I would never
let's
turn my back on my children. So.
Right. Yeah, me neither. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. I went through a little bit of frustration with my oldest. And it's because, I guess, you know, you have a fairy tale view of raising your children inside Islam. So you're like, okay, if they're going to get older and they're going to take over, they're going to walk right into your footsteps. They're going to be going to college with their garments on, stuff like that. And then you start to see them, you know, the dress starts to slip, and you're like, yo, wait a minute. You're not supposed to be dressing like that. And then you see them, like, they want to hang out with their friends a little bit more and stuff like that. And you're like, wait, hold up. And I guess, to me, what I'm finding out, and this is very therapeutic what you're telling me now, because, you know, me, listen, I'm not an authoritarian. I generally bring down hard, strict law with my children when they're very, very young. And what I found is when you do that, the older they get, the less you really have to discipline them, and the less you, because you've already instilled a strong discipline and parameters in them when they were younger. So they get older, they know not to get out of the pocket and do this and do that. Like, I've had very minimal troubles with all five of my children. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is that I think it's a control thing sometimes. When your children get older and you want them to talk exactly like you talk and walk exactly like you walk and, you know, go through the same thing you went through minus the struggle. And you got to realize, like you just said, they all have different attributes, and they have to live out those attributes a different way. Because my children, not all of my children, they're not Dawood, you know what I mean? They, and then, you know, they may have Muhammad as the last name, but they're not Dawood. So they have to live out a different life, and I have to, be, you know, love them enough to respect that and just catch them if they fall.
That's correct.
So therapeutic for me. Okay, so let's get into this real quick. So we want to, because we're going somewhere with the testimony you have to give. So now, as an NGT, why don't you talk about the guidelines for raising children, if you could, like briefly?
Well, basically, you teach them, you know, honor, respect. You teach them, you know, just normal things. I mean, Islam is a way of life, brother. So it's not like I could say, okay, we do this. You know, you try to teach them how to eat and live. You teach them, like I said, honor, respect, righteousness. That's basically the law, you know, in any Muslim family's house.
Right. Okay. So, you know, with that and going with that, because we have children and we know that having children in America is not an easy thing, so a lot of black people are talking about this. Is there anything that the messenger taught on inoculations or shots, you know, like booster shots and vaccinations and things like that?
That's so funny that you brought that up. No, I'm laughing because I was schooling my mom on this morning. And, I talked to my mom. My mom, like, if I don't get her off the phone, but I be talking to her. She had said to me, you see the seriousness behind the measles shot, people not getting shots, and it says 72 cases in California, and they believe it came from Disneyland.
So
the messenger taught us not to give our baby shots. This was all the way back in 1933 all the way to 1975. I mean, such a wise messenger, such a wise messenger. And he told us not to do this. The first thing he said was, you know, first of all, we should have midwives to deliver our babies so that we don't have to worry about being subject to the immunizations. That's first off.
Right.
Second of all, if you have to have, you have to go to the hospital to have a baby, deny any shots.
Right.
Third, have your own schools so that you don't have to have immunizations. So I was telling my mother this morning, I said, you know, it's like this. It's around tax time. They have to start, you know, stereos and stuff like that, because they're about to give out a whole bunch of money. They're about to give out a whole bunch of money to people. So they got to concoct all these different things, you know, so they make you panic. They make you go out and get, you know, immunizations because that's a plan to kill you off. So, like I tell my mom, I'm like, look, none of my children have shots. It's not my children you have to worry about. I have to worry about their children because, see, they already have the virus. It's a matter of time when it's going to kick in and affect their body. Where you see the measles or chickenpox or whatever they may have. Then my children that do not have the shots, will be affected by it. But my children won't be able to fight it off because their immune system has not been tampered with.
Right.
So
right.
Their immune system has been tampered with. So they say it comes from Disneyland. Now, Disney World, wherever it came from, that's a children's place. They,
right.
I also
exactly.
heard that they quarantined a couple of families that refused to get their children immunizations. They quarantined them and told them they can't go to school unless they get shots.
Right. That's
and,
usually what they say, too.
Right. So I told my mom, I said, well, they're causing hysteria to see how many of us are going to run out. Not just us. It's not just us that's not giving our baby shots. A
right.
bunch of white, you know, white people are not doing it. Other people are not doing it. So, you know, the first thing they think is, okay, now these are the people that don't have their own businesses. You got to remember what you're dealing with. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So they don't have their
right.
own businesses. That means they have to go to work. So guess what? Who's going to stay home and watch my children? So guess what I got to
right.
do? I got to go out and get immunizations. See how that ripple effect goes? So now my
mm-hmm.
baby got immunizations so I can stay at work so I can provide for my family. And in the meantime,
right. Right.
my children are going to die because they got immunizations, a slow death.
Right. right. And, you know, if I may add, being a person that works in hospitals, because that's all I do, you know, I do security in hospitals and stuff like that, and they make it mandatory for you to take a flu shot there if you work at the hospital. Now,
right.
praise is due to Allah. For me, I'm a subcontractor, so I don't have to get no flu shot. If you don't get a flu shot, they kind of humiliate you. And what they do is they basically make you wear a mask walking around because their mentality is if you didn't get the flu shot, and you breathe in the air, you cough, you're going to infect somebody else. So you could always tell the people who resisted the flu shot because they got that mask on and they're walking around. I just be laughing at them because I'm a subcontractor, so I don't have to get it. You know, but
right.
the funny thing is for me is that I be around the hospital way more than everybody else. But just because I'm a subcontractor, I don't have to get it. But I have gotten a flu shot in the past. I will admit that. I got it like a couple of years ago but when I was ignorant to it. And you know, basically it hurts, first of all, and then second of all, it gives you more of a chance of getting the flu than anything. So I just don't know why anybody would get it, but they start pushing that bad boy on you as soon as it gets a little bit cold, and it's crazy. Now, as far as the children is concerned, you know, we all know that those shots have been linked to autism and said other things. So, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, that's definitely... The title of this show, I guess, was The Dragon, and that's, to me, one of the early signs of the dragon laying at the head of the baby is trying to give you these inoculations and shots that's laced with God knows what, because we know that that's how they infected a lot of our brothers and sisters on the continent of Africa also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the shots really mess us up. It destroys
right.
our immune system. Once the immune system is destroyed, brother, it's pretty much once they can get the immune system to basically turn on itself, in which you have
mm-hmm.
a lot of autoimmune disease, not meaning not just HIV. You know, you have all types of different autoimmune disorders, like, you know, lupus, antiphospholipid.
Right.
There's many things. Like even Nick Cannon just came out saying that he had lupus. You know, I used to think
wow,
that was just
that.
A woman's disease. Yes, he just came out said he had lupus. And that's when he was in the hospital a couple of months ago. Well, about a year. I think it was about a year now that he was in the hospital. He had an interview and said that he had had lupus. And
wow.
what lupus is basically it's an autoimmune deficiency somewhere in
right.
his body. You know, and lupus
right.
could be caused by a couple of things, either by medication or
mm-hmm.
it was transferred from placenta in the womb, you know, to the mm-hmm. Mother to the child. And I thought it was very funny that it said medication. So lupus is, what do you call that? Self-induced, could be self-induced
right.
by a medication. It's not something that just came out the sky. So Then they give you medication because lupus can affect, just say, like rheumatoid arthritis, different things like that, so it starts messing with the joints. So now they give you medicine that when you take the medicine, it doesn't even affect you for about 3 or 4 months later, and then the medicine they give you is medicine that they treat patients that have cancer. It coincides with the chemo. So you're thinking that you're going to be treated for, like, arthritis and all this other different stuff, and that it's just a little simple pill, and but then you have to take medication that's going to eventually kill you, plus take another medication to counteract the bad effects of the medication, so it'll kill you slowly instead of quickly. That is wicked. That's wicked. Right. You know what I'm saying? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said you can't even fathom the depths of this devil.
Right. Yeah. And this is, people ask us, like, oh, why you guys got to separate? And it's like, okay, do you hear what we're saying here? The people not only are selling you the disease, then they're selling you the cure. Like, who the hell would want to grow up in a society where that's okay? It takes a very sick-minded person where that is, that's actually, not only is that okay, but that's written in some people's books as far as, you know, when you become a doctor, you have to study this, and you have to promise that you're going to inflict the same poison on somebody else. It's like, when you say it like that, it sounds wicked, but when you say it like, well, I've taken the oath in order to help heal people, it makes it sound legitimate. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Let's move on to the next point, and that is, excuse me, you have experienced homeschooling, because I remember you were saying to me that you had to put your children in the devil's school at some point. So you have some experience homeschooling, and I know you taught at the Muhammad's University. Can you tell our listeners what it is to homeschool, why you chose the homeschool, and why that in and of itself will be the cornerstone of the community that we're trying to build?
Well, I chose homeschool because I had noticed, for one, like I said, I've been in the nation since I was 16. So it was always, right, if you don't have your own school, then you should homeschool your children. But everybody's not qualified to homeschool their children, you know. And so this is one reason why we should have our, you know, as a temple, a mosque, whatever you want to call yourselves these days, it's important that we get together as a community and have a building in which the children go to. But if you can't, you should homeschool your children. There's many things out there that can, your children can get a part of that, you know, be okay, and then you can monitor what they say. But I chose it because I noticed, like, my older children, they weren't getting the lesson that I wanted them to learn. Like, they had all this talent, but it was like not being tapped into. And then they come home with different things, and it was like, that's a lie. So you try to do book reports with them, and you're trying to tell them the truth, you know, but then they get a bad grade on it. So they wanted the lie instead of the right stuff, and because they give you a bad grade on it. So I started to notice things like that, and I started noticing, again, the influence, where it starts. It starts in school, you know, because if you're raising your children, you know, but if you're not homeschooling them, then when they get to school, they could be Muslim when they come home, but when they get to school, they totally something different, you know, and you're getting phone calls. Did you know that your son, Muhammad, is doing such and such and such? And I'm like, what? You know? Where did this come from? You know, so, you know, because it's like they feel bottled up. So I'm like, you know what, we gotta do something. So I started doing that at a very early age, homeschooling my children. And up until I had got pregnant with my last daughter, which was last year, because I had became ill during the pregnancy. My younger children are in school until the end of this year, and then that's it. We're going back to homeschool.
Got you. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Okay, so in that, didn't you say, well, you were telling me that you had a couple of problems in the school system with your children. Would you care to tell us about it?
Sure. Well, I have a son. He's 12 years old, and he goes to, he's still in like middle school, elementary school, because how they have them set up here, that's how they do it. But I searched for this. I searched for the best school. Now, mind you, I didn't just say, okay, you are just gonna go to school down the street. We have open enrollment here. So they could go any school that they want to. So I chose a school. I looked at the test scores. I looked at all this different stuff. I'm like, okay, I want this school. So I get up, and I take them all the way across town to go to school. Well, then, so I'm thinking, you know, just so foolish. So I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be a good school for my children. Now, my children go to a multicultural school, which means there's whites, there's Puerto Ricans, because we don't have Mexicans or anything like that. They're Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Cubans. So, I would say a handful of black children. Okay, so the teachers, at first my children kept coming home and saying, I don't like them because this or that or this and this. And I said, well, maybe, do you think it might be you? It's, you know, hard to adjust. And they're like, no, Mom, this is really going on. So I go up to the school, and, you know, first off, teachers make it seem like it's the child. But really, it's not really the children. It's really the way that the teacher's teaching. And so my children couldn't understand what she was talking about because of the fact that she would scream at them when was teaching them. So it was you know, like my son, you know, came home today and said, well, she asked me did I have a book, that I had a book, and I didn't get the book because I had a doctor's appointment. And I'm like, yes, I remember that. But she was like, you have the book, you know, and was screaming at him. So I'm like, okay, I will go and I will talk to her about that. Well, that's not really the issue. But the next issue was, which is really bothering my mind, is that my son, 12 years old, was suspended for sexual harassment.
Okay.
Yes. He was suspended for sexual harassment. So my husband calls me because he picked the children up, and he was like, they won't let me in the school. And I'm like, for what? I mean, what's wrong? He was like, well, they said, you know, he's getting suspended from school. And I'm like, well, why is he getting suspended? So he's like, because he, for sexual harassment. And I'm like, okay, I got to call you back. So I hung up the phone. I called up. Now, he outside. I called into the school. They gave me the phone to my son. And I'm telling like, what happened? So he tells me what happened. So I'm like, put the principal on the phone. Now, the principal, the assistant principal, he's a brother. But that don't mean anything. So he gets on the phone. He's like, yes, your son said this and this. I said, well, first off, I said, my son said, what happened was a young boy had said something to this young girl, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The young girl did not hear the young boy. So she asked one student what the boy said. So the other student told her. Let's say student B told her. Student A said. But then she still went to student C, which is my son, went to student C and asked my son what the student A said. So my son said, well, didn't student B tell you student A tell you? She was like, well, I don't know. She was like, I don't know if they're telling the truth, so I want to know if you know it. So he said, yes. And so he told her what the student had said. So she goes and she tells the security guard what student C and B said that student A said. But she wasn't upset with student A because student A was Puerto Rican. But student B and C are black. And she's black. The young girl was black.
Right.
So the security guard scolded student A and was like, don't ever do that again, and sent him on his way, okay? But student B and C, which C is my son, went to the office, and they suspended both of them for sexual harassment. So when I asked him, I said, well, first of all, how could it be sexual harassment when she asked him what he said? He was just telling her what he said because she said she didn't hear him, but she wanted confirmation from my son. I said, I didn't raise my son like that. I said, I know my son. I said, my son and my daughters can't even have boyfriends until they're married. So I knew when I first heard that was not my son.
Right.
I said,
so now
you're trying to tell me that you want to suspend my child over something that somebody asked, that she asked him. She welcomed mm-hmm. that into her person. He was just trying to do the right thing and tell her. Well, he says, well, if this was the real world and he was an adult, sexual harassment is a serious crime. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. I said, brother, all the time I'm talking to him, like I'm with the firmness in my voice and I'm explaining it to you, it's the same way I'm talking to him. I said, first of all, brother, I said, I understand you trying to do a job. I said, but I want you to understand what I'm about to do. And I said, first of all, you're not going to put that on my son, on that label on my son, so that future, if something ever happened to him, that he's going to be labeled as a pedophile or a freak or some type of thing. You're not going to do that. So then later on in life that, you know, you don't put a rap sheet on him, and or when he was a juvenile, he was a troublemaker, and he, you know, did this. I said, you're not going to do that. I said, now, you could do that maybe to other people's children, but that one right there, you won't do that. I said, because do you hear what you're saying to me? She asked him, well, I could expel him. I said, and what's that going to do? I said, that's going to be even more better, because then I don't have to abide by any of your laws anymore. That means I don't have to turn in test scores, and I don't have to get, you know, different things for them to qualify for homeschool. So, oh, hallelujah. So, Dad, you ain't doing nothing. You know, you're not doing nothing but for a favor. I said, but I understand where you're coming from, brother. I understand. You have to do your job. Well, ma'am, you have to understand that this is very serious. I said, to who? I said, my son didn't do nothing. I said, you're painting him as a criminal. I said, he don't even know what sexual harassment means, let alone you suspending him off of something that somebody asked him. What did somebody else say? I said, okay, I see you at the school board. So I called the school board. They told me I had to do a appeal. And so I picked my son up today. And I asked him every day, like, what's going on in school? And he said, Mom, you know that student A? I'm like, yeah. And he was like, well, he's going to be suspended today. And I'm like, for what? Because he said something else to somebody else. I said, oh, okay. But I try not to – I'm already a little militant, so I try not to get too militant. But what I saw in this, and this is the lesson that I told my son. Remember I told you about the island, right, brother, in the beginning? I said, let me tell y'all something. They all in the car. I said, y'all are on an island at that school by yourself. I don't care what's going on in that school. You only concern yourself with this. If somebody wants to ask you something, you tell them, no, you cannot tell them. If somebody, just like when they held my son, I say they held my son hostage. And they made him sign the suspension letter. They didn't call me, and I told them I would never have told him to sign that. I said, but you didn't allow my husband into the school so that my husband, if you wanted him to sign something, my husband would have signed it. He is 12 years old. He is not legally bound by anything. But now you made him legally bound by something because you allowed him to put his signature on it. And so I told him, I said, from this day forward, you do not sign nothing. I don't care what it is. You sign nothing. And if they bring you in the office, you tell them, I cannot speak to you unless my parents are here. Do I make myself clear? Now, that's the law right there. I said, that's the law. You do not sign nothing and you do not speak. I don't care. If you're in trouble, I need to call my mother. Because they are so wicked, and they will put things on your children at an early age that will affect them into their life. Not only I see this, now I see the two brothers, they sided the two brothers against the sister, the young sister. Mm-hmm. So now, here you go, the black-on-black crime, male against female. They allowed the Puerto Rican, not saying nothing against my brothers, our brown brothers, but this is what they're doing now, even in the adult world. playing the poor, you know, the brown against the black. And now they allowed him to go, even though he was the antagonizer. And so now they let him go only for him to do it again. Now, so I went up to the school. They was having some after school thing. I said, well, I'm going to stay up here because I want to meet her parents. I want to see if her parents are there. But her parents wasn't there, and neither was the other student. I said, because they're banking off that we don't talk to each other. But I want to find out who their parents are, especially the student B's parents, because I want her to go to the school board with me as well. But I have to realize we might be on this island by ourselves. But to make a long story short is that's why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to keep our children in home schools or in our own schools so we wouldn't have to go through these problems. Right. You know, so now I bear witness, like, I don't care if I'm on my deathbed, if I have underage children, they're going to have to be homeschooled. Because it's that serious that now my children, now my son is finding something that he don't even know what sexual harassment is. And it wasn't even sexual. I told him, what I fault you for is that you repeated something that you shouldn't have repeated. You should have said, just go ask him. But because you're dealing with a 12-year-old mind, they don't think like that. You know what I'm saying? We can. That's the whole thing that I was telling you. You know, you can drill into your children and you can do all this stuff within the nation, but if you don't teach your children, you know, practical skills that they can use when they get out in the real world, they're doomed.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? They don't care about making no bean pies, mother. They need stuff that's going to help them survive. No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you.
I'm serious. They need skills, or they need lessons that's going to help them to survive and to be able to handle people like that when they come. They need to be able to think fast. You know what I'm saying? So that's the kind of training that we should be giving our children. Not anything else is minute. At this time, we are at war. That means you have to have a war mentality for the survival of your family. Brother?
No, I'm sorry. Since my phone dropped.
I was like, dang, the devil was like, cut us off.
Without the devil.
I'd have been here.
That happened in the beginning of the conversation, too. You just didn't know.
I was just talking away.
No. Before I even started, like, at the introduction, I dropped, like, in the first 5 minutes. It's crazy. But, you was going in. You was definitely going in. I want to speed us up a little something here and talk about or go in a different direction for a second, if that's okay. Now, we in the law group, we favor a council. My brothers of the Black African Infrastructure Organization, we favor a council. But a lot of our brothers and sisters in other groups and other so-called nations or whatever, they favor having one leader. Can you please tell the people why we favor a council and not, you know, choosing one dude or one sister and that person is over everybody?
Well, a council makes everything fair. You know, you get past the ego, the envious, the jealousy, and you have a collective view from different people, from different walks of life that make you different things.
Right.
You know, that have different cultures that can bring to the table to allow you to grow differently and more powerfully.
Right.
With one person, that one person can really only within their mind.
Right.
You know what they assume is righteousness, but if you get a council, you're collectively you'll be able to basically. From different minds, you know, many minds, there's one mind. And a lie is many.
That's right. Absolutely. Okay. And I agree also. Not only do I agree with that in the sense that you said, but
Wow.
Azeem, brother Azeem wanted to, I guess he wants you to let people know how to get to the Allah group, how people can get in touch with us, how people can get find out what we're doing.
Okay, well, right now we have taken a break because I just had a child. So they basically are allowing me to finish out my maternity leave. Some good brothers, so that's a good thing. But once that is up, I will post it on Facebook. I'll send you a direct link so that maybe you could put it on the blog talk or I could send you directly a direct link and then allow you know when the conference calls and when they could call in and things like that.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. Because, I can't wait.
Me either, right?
Oh, man. I mean, I miss talking to y'all. I miss just the whole thing. It's just fantastic. But, okay, so here's another question I'm going to ask you and draw on some of your heat, and then we're going to close out. You know, my good brother, Brother Tracy X, he had posted today, he said that many are using an outdated model, and I'm just paraphrasing it. I don't know if you saw it, but he said many are using an outdated model to try to execute, you know, the teachings on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. There's a lot of people who think that, okay, all we have to do is this, this, and this, and we're going to have the same exact nation that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad built. Now, I know, you know, we know that is not possible. But can you tell the people why that is not possible, and what is realistic for us to rebuild or even build to try to give something to our people?
Well, first of all, we can't use what they used then. For simple
right.
fact, those people were in a different mind.
Right.
You know, a lot of them came from like sharecropper backgrounds. They had more of the mentality where what is understood need not to be explained. Everybody
right.
wanted to get away from the white man because of the hangings and the lynchings and the mistreatment. So it was easy for them to just follow in suit. They knew
right.
the white man was the devil. They had firsthand.
Right.
See, today, you don't know who the devil is.
Right.
Because the devil comes in many, many forms and has many faces. But a lot of us want to be like the devil.
Right.
And so,
right.
you know, so that's what they used then, we cannot use now.
Right.
Not changing the teachings, because you never change the teachings.
Right. Never.
You just add on so
right.
that you can move forward in the future. See, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said you seek knowledge even unto China. So what does that
right.
mean? That means that you one day would have to grasp different knowledge from different places to help you build. It just brings me
right.
back to, the making of the mothership. There
right.
was all types of people all around the world bringing different types of material to build this ship. To one
right.
day be able to go up into the atmosphere. You see what I'm saying? And to survive and have a city and within a city.
Right.
It's the same thing that we have to do, too. We have to be able to bring people on all different walks of life that have different knowledge. Now, all of them are not going to believe in Muhammad. Some may believe
right.
in Buddha. Some, you know, whatever they may be. You know, they're
right.
going to believe differently, but they have the key. See, we have to take resources from amongst our people.
Right.
Not the Caucasian. So we're not using instruments that the Caucasian have. We're using instruments that we have.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So we're
right.
we're using the original mind, because everything that the Caucasian has is copycat. You see what I'm saying? See where
right.
I'm getting this at? They can't do
yep.
nothing unless they come through us. We have
yes,
to
ma'am.
Think it first.
Yes.
The original mind has to think it first. So that goes with
right.
anything. So that means that I have to pull from my original people to help us move into the modern time.
Right.
So that we can go forward. Because, see, the laws, they, you know, they had laws back then because nobody really read. Nobody
right.
read. But, see, us Negroes now, we read it now. You see what
right.
I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So now they got to put it in laws on top of laws and other books and stuff like this, hoping that we don't find them. Because we read
right.
it now. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
now that we're reading, I'm like, they could think. And they have intelligence, too.
True.
So now we have to find, you know, we have to build on top of that. Back then, they didn't do that. They were
right.
too scared. They had fear.
Right.
You living in a time where you living with a lot of soldiers.
Right.
Our ancestors prayed for this day. So
right.
now we have to be able to, you know, execute what our ancestors prayed for.
Right.
That's why the messenger said, what you're doing now, you're not going to do in the future. He knows. See, that's why we don't, a lot of us don't study what the messenger said. He knew what it was going to take. He knew that us stiff-necked, hard-hearted Negroes wasn't going to pay attention. We wasn't going to no mosque.
Right.
You ain't going to no temple. Praying, what you talk five, praying five times a day? Are you silly? He said, my best followers are in the streets.
In the streets. That's right. That's right.
Not meaning that, you know, they wearing saggy pants, and that means there's intellect out here. You just got to
right.
find it.
Right. Right.
You know, you got to be able to find it. You have to be able to execute that knowledge and that wisdom from the original black man. We have to be able to
right.
do that. So we can't
right.
live back then. We got to move forward.
Right.
You know what
yeah,
I'm saying, brother?
Yeah.
We have to move forward. And a lot of us don't want to move forward because I understand. I mean, I don't understand. But I can understand the love that you have for something and you just can't let it go. But if you
right.
don't let it go and you don't move forward, it can kill you.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Because stress kills. And that's exactly
right.
what I see the nation up under. We're under stress. Where that stress from back then is affecting the children today. Because
right.
you bred stress into them because of the pain because you lost the messenger. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But now, instead of saying, I'm going to birth something to make the messenger proud and let's move forward, we're not moving forward.
Right.
We're regressing.
Right.
And that's why the devil is able to do what he's doing now because you didn't take it and run with it. It's been almost
right.
40 years. This month, February, will be 40 years the messengers have been gone from us.
Right, right. That
and we
true.
Still don't have nothing that equates. Not even, we don't
not
even
a
have a decent scroll that can even compete with the messengers, Muhammad University.
Right, right. No doubt. I mean, not even a fraction. Not even a fraction. And that's the goal of the Allah group. Our goal is to reconstruct high black society. We know we're not going to have it like we used to have it. We know we're not like some of these crazy Negroes out there. We're going to rebuild and it's come on now. It's like this is a different time period that we're living in, and we're going to do what we need to do and how we need to do it, and we're going to make sure that we can do trade with those brothers and sisters who have land, infrastructure, and nationhood off the continent. And, I mean, it's going to be beautiful and it's going to work. And my brothers from the Black African Infrastructure Organization are listening to the show. They're here. And, you know, they're supporting what we do. So I thank you for coming on the show, sister, because, you know, I wanted the people to hear your voice, and I wanted you to express all that you expressed today. And you hit the home run. You hit it out the park. I'm so glad that you did so. And when you are ready to start, man, sister, please, the pleasure is all mine. And when you're ready to start to get the conference calls and things like that together, I would like you to come back one more time, you know what I'm saying, and just give people a brief description of some of the ideas that you have and things like that. And eventually, Brother Azim is listening. Eventually, I want to have him and Brother Rasul on the show, and they could also give some ideas and as well as their background. And so people can get to know us, because I have a show with my good brothers from the Black African Infrastructure Organization like once a week or sometimes once every 2 weeks. And, you know, so people could get our goals and things like that. And I want to also give people, you know, an idea of what we're doing so we can attract more. Because the goal is to have as many satellite communities in America, and the goal is to also have some kind of headquarters off the continent that cannot be controlled by the devil at all. And this is something that we will realize, you know, while you and I are living and while you and I are breathing. I thank you so much, sister, and I'm going to get on out of here.
Thank you, brother.
You're quite welcome, sister. Did you want to say anything else before you go?
No, brother. I think I said everything. I'm sorry to take up the time. I don't think we had time for any questions and stuff like that. But, you know, inshallah, we'll be, you know, I'll be back and, you know, to have all, maybe we could just make that all questions and answers.
Okay. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, sister. You did a phenomenal job. I'm so proud to be your brother, and I'll be talking to you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother.
Yes,
you too.
I'll see you.
Thank you.